For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
This is Bruce Corbett of Warbeast, and you are listening to MSR Cast. Crank it up!
Thank you. Welcome, my friends, to episode number 217 of MSR Cast, your metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
How are you doing, sir?
Very good.
Have you been living it up with some metal? Or living it down?
You know, I've been living it up with the metal. I've also been living it up with other types of music, and
that's unacceptable.
Unconventional concert experiences and stuff like that. Yeah,
we could talk about that.
Yeah,
what have you been up to?
What was it? This?
Well, do you have your wallet on you? I might need your metal card. I don't know.
So this past Monday, I went to go see Sarah Brightman at this big amphitheater. Well, not amphitheater, but this big venue we have here, indoor venue, Smart Financial Center in Sugarland.
Yeah, it's right by our house.
First of all, that is an impressive venue.
It's not your first time there.
That was my first time there.
Really?
That is a ritzy place on the inside.
The first time I went there was for Judas Priest.
Yeah.
Second time was Slayer and Behemoth. So just imagine seeing those bands in that.
I mean,
what you're describing right now.
Because everyone was. This is Sarah Brightman, if you don't know. And I've written about her on the blog, actually, recently at the Metal Pigeon.
.com.
She does classical music. She's like a soprano, and she's like a, you know, highly celebrated operatic vocalist who did Broadway.
Did she do something with, like, The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings or something?
No, I mean, she did Phantom of the Opera and, like, Cats back in the 80s. But the reason why I'm a fan of her is her solo career is like all these, you know, classical. And so it's just really epic music, and her vocals are great. So
does she have a backing band or the orchestra?
Oh yeah, there's a band. There's a friggin' orchestra. There's a 32 piece choir.
Wow.
It was like a big production, and it was like, I just finally wanted to go see her because I've always skipped every time she's come to Houston. And this time I was just like, I gotta go see her at least once. And I'm glad I did. It was a weird situation though for me, because I'm the only metalhead there. I'm wearing my Swallow the Sun hoodie, first of all. Big mistake. Because I got the hard eye from every cop around that area and every security guard. Kind of like, what the hell are you doing here? Because everyone else is like dressed. It's like, you know, not like a dress code, but they're gussied up a little bit. So anyway.
You're gussied up in your best Swallow the Sun hoodie.
I just didn't think people were going to, like, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so I'm up there. I'm in the section. In the row next to me are just like a bunch of old ladies. Like, you know, polite, rich, Sugarland, Texas, old ladies. And then, like, a bunch of flamboyant gay guys around me, like, in that area. And I'm just like, all right, this is a weird mix, but this is cool. And the old ladies are, like, asking me about, like, my shirt and, like, oh, you know. And I was talking to them, and they were nice and everything.
Yeah.
They didn't even stay through the entire show. They, like, at one point, they were
past their bedtime.
Like, they loved it. They were having a great time. They were clapping and standing up and giving her a standing ovation and everything. And then they just decided, like, all right, we've seen enough and we're out. So they leave. My entire fucking row is empty. And, like, the gay guys move up into my row. And we're just, like, high-fiving throughout the end of the set. Like, yeah! Because one of them is just, like, incredibly emotional. Like, every time, when she went to Time to Say Goodbye, which is, like, her signature hit, he, like, clutched his chest and was, like, standing in the aisle like he was about to faint.
Oh, God.
And, like, I guess his husband was, like, sitting there in the chair just kind of rolling his eyes like, oh, God. So it was a weird experience, but
it sounds like fun, though.
It was fun.
If you had a good time, that's all that fucking matters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've definitely been to some non-metal shows.
I couldn't visualize Slayer fans or whatever being in there.
It was interesting. When we saw Priest, we were maybe fifth to sixth row, which is fun.
Yeah, I was
Slayer, we were third row.
Wow. On the ground?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely weird seeing Slayer, Behemoth, Testament, Anthrax, and some other band we walked out on. Oh yeah, Lamb of God.
Yeah, see, I was up in, like, the mid-level kind of balcony area thing. Yeah. But it was fine. The view was great. And the thing I realized about that theater, because and I'm sure it wasn't like this for the shows you went to, they sort of, like, can reposition the stage, like, move it in different directions. It moves.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And they can, like, partition off parts of the arena with, like, these huge walls that come down.
When Slayer played, there was the most fire I've ever seen inside of a theater. I think I showed you in the video.
Yeah.
That was inside that place.
She didn't do any pyros, but she had tons of, like, lights and all that kind of stuff. So
nice.
Yeah.
What else? Have you seen any other live performances?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Me. I know there's a bunch of stuff coming up. We have the Wolfheart, Swallow the Sun, and Children of Bodom show.
Yeah.
Notice I was very careful not to say Children of Bodom.
Yeah.
We were actually listening to a little bit of one of the new songs, and it hit me. They have stolen Stradivarius's shtick and just made it a little bit more Melodeath. That's all they've done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that keyboard sound is definitely just totally stolen from Stradivarius.
Oh, yeah. There's a freaking keyboard solo in the new song. I'm like, yeah. I actually give them props for that, too.
Yeah.
Not many bands will do that.
They had that in some of their older records and stuff. They kind of moved away from it a little bit, but yeah, I'm still unsure about everything I've been hearing.
I don't really like their guitar tone.
Yeah.
It's too modern.
Yeah.
New metal-ish.
New
metal's not even around anymore.
Songs I hear, I kind of want to hear that old Children of Bodom sound.
So we started everything off with something from Avantasia.
Mm-hmm.
I've always called it Avantasia or Avantasia, but actually I've heard Tobias say Avantasia.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say. They have a new album that just came out called Moonglow. The song that we picked is called Requiem for a Dream. And of course, we had to pick this song because it has one of the all-time great vocalists, Michael Kiske, on the song.
Yep.
Him, dude, when Tobias Sammet and Michael Kiske harmonize and sing together,
yeah,
fucking magic.
Yeah.
It's just metal magic.
I still think my favorite Kiske-Tobias collaboration was on... remember on the Wicked Symphony, there was a song called Wastelands?
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite of theirs.
I like that song. They also did that, which is weird, something at the opera.
Oh, Judas at the Opera.
Judas at the Opera, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a B-side on that EP. Yeah,
but I really like that song.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Yeah. Anything with Michael Kiske, he's phenomenal. He's one of the vocalists that can hit that range and can still hit it 30 years later.
I know,
I mean... When I saw him live with Helloween last year, fucking mind-blowing, dude. Yeah. It's like, how is this dude hitting these fucking notes?
Yeah. I think, and then taking like almost a decade plus off from metal kind of helped, you know, like keep his voice in shape and intact and stuff like that.
I can see that. And I don't know if we've mentioned this on the show, but my wife and I have tickets to go see Avantasia in Anaheim at the end of May, or close to the end of May.
Yeah.
Super excited. We're buying our airplane tickets now. We're buying, you know, the cheapest stuff you can get just to get there. But I'm excited.
So here's the question.
Yeah.
Do you want their set list to be populated with a lot of songs from the new album?
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to the new album. We want to discuss that a little bit. But, yeah, you know, yes and no. I know. Let's talk about the new album. I'm going to pull up who's actually touring with them, because it's people I wish that were on the tour are not. Let me get your opinion on the new album, because I know we've talked about it a little bit.
Yeah. I walked into, you know, and I wrote about this on my review that I put up like a week or so ago, but I walked into this album. It kind of, sometimes it's hard to walk into an album from a band you love after their last album is just one that you put on a pedestal. And I put Ghostlights on a pedestal because that, to me, that album, when I walked into that one, I didn't expect much. And it just blew me away. And so that's, for the most part, that's like my favorite Avantasia album of all time. I put it above the metal operas for the most part, because I just think it's such a well-rounded experience.
I like the metal operas, but I don't think it's his best work for sure.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the metal operas are soaked in a lot of nostalgia, too. So, but as far as like a complete, the album I would recommend to people to who are new to Avantasia, I would say Ghostlights in a Heartbeat. So that's the problem with Moonglow. Had that problem to kind of, they had to follow that experience up, and it was never going to live up to that hype that I had in my mind of like, well, you know. And I feel it's almost unfair because you set it up for a little bit of a disappointment. Mm-hmm. That being said, I do think Moonglow is a good album. At times it can be very good.
Yep.
And at times it can be kind of underwhelming. And I think that the highs are really high. I love the way the album opens. The first three, four tracks are amazing. And then it starts to go on a little bit of like a little roller coaster here, you know, and it's like, Requiem for a Dream, the song we played, that kind of comes, I think, in towards the end of the record.
It's the second or third to last song.
Yeah. So there are good moments at the end and
before
stuff.
Maniac, the cover of Maniac.
Yeah. And really ill-advised choice to cover one of the worst songs that I could ever imagine this band covering, Maniac.
I like Firewind's version better, actually.
I just don't like that song in general, like the original. Mm-hmm. I was always annoyed by that song. So when I saw they were covering it, I was just like, oh, there's no way you guys can make me like this song. And as it turns out, I was right. And I will say that on this album, the guest list, I love the choice of Candace Knight as the female vocalist. And I wondered why it took so long for them to get her, because she's such an inspired choice. She's such a great vocalist in Blackmore's Night. I've been a fan of hers for a long time. Uh-huh. And her voice really works with power metal and especially, particularly his writing style. This Moonglow, the title track, was the perfect song for her. And that duet is just, it's one of my favorite moments on the album. My favorite song is Ghost in the Ruins is the first song on the record. And it's got that kind of Jim Steinman, meatloafy kind of rollicking piano underneath feel.
Yeah, I feel that.
And I love it. And it's funny.
He does a lot of that kind of stuff, though.
Well, it's funny because one of the comments on my review was he's doing too much of this meatloaf stuff. And I kind of wish he'd scale it back. And I was like, okay, I could see that criticism, too, uh-huh. where it's yeah. like there's too much of it on this album. And I think this album's guilty of that.
I think I've mentioned this to you before. This album has a lot of sameness to me. Like, right. when you know it's a Tobias riff and it's his cadence and the beat and everything, you know it's something that Tobias Sammet wrote. Either it's an Aventasia or it's an Ed guy or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but not every song on the album is like it, but there's a lot of stuff that is very similar and very samey.
Right.
Which, I mean, I can get over it. Because there is a like the Moonglow song is totally different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the song we started off, Working for a Dream, it could have gone there, but it's a banger, man. It's just fast paced, exactly what you want, and it's not the same. It's not the same cadence as a lot of the other stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's other bands that are guilty of it too. Some of my favorite bands in the world, like Iron Maiden, is guilty of doing a lot of the same style. Songwriting, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a criticism, it's just something I really noticed on this album. And it's not particularly this song on this album sounds like another song on this album, but this song on this album sounds like something he's done before on a previous album. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's hard for him to get away from that because the way he writes songs is he writes the chorus first and then writes everything else around it.
Yeah, I can see that.
So he has this kind of ingrained way of writing a chorus. The big criticism that I can level at him is that Ghostwrites was so diverse and presented so many new things, you know, like Draconian Love. That was such
an
unusual tone for him to take. Lucifer, that was such a great ballad for Jorn to come on, like this weird kind of epic rushing ballad. And it's like he had all these new ideas last time. And this time it's just like, I'm going to do the Steinman bit. I'm going to walk into this kind of just tried and true Aventasia sound to his detriment. I think what you're saying is a lot of it sounds the same.
Yeah.
And you think, okay,
Samesies.
Tobias Sammet can't help but sound like Tobias Sammet. That's just who he is. But mm-hmm. It would be, I think, beneficial for him to maybe reach back into sounds like, you know, the Hellfire Club from Ed Guy.
Yeah.
Or maybe take a little bit from the metal opera era and bring it into the new stuff. And, you know, because I know we played the Kiske track and you go, well, that kind of sounds like something that could be on the metal operas. But what I'm saying more is bring back some of the harder edge, like the Ed Guy Mandrake era stuff. You know, the change it up a little bit. Don't kind of get locked into this everything's a grand Broadway meatloaf adventure. And that, I think, is kind of my main gripe with the record.
So here's the touring lineup he's going to have with him. Eric Martin from Mr. Big.
Wow.
Jorn Land.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
This brings up another thing for me.
Jeff Tate.
Yeah.
Moving on. Bob Catley, Ronnie Atkins, Adrian Cowan, and Herbie Langhams.
Yeah.
Which, that's a good lineup.
Herbie's good.
Yeah.
I mean, Herbie's a good respected session vocalist. He's also in Sinbreed, and he did the vocals on Draconian Love last time on the Ghost Lights album.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure they're going to play it then.
Yeah, no,
I haven't seen the set list yet.
Yeah, I bet they're going to play that song.
And the band includes Oliver Hartman, who's going to be doing vocals as well.
Yeah.
Sasha Pace, Miro Rodenberg, I don't know who that is.
He's a keyboardist.
Okay, Felix Bonke.
Yeah, drummer, yeah.
Yep. And Andre Nagenfein, don't know who that is.
So here's my criticism of this album's guest list.
This is the tour guest list.
Right, yeah. But the thing is, like, you just announced all those names for the tour. Mm-hmm. The one thing I thought about, like, it seems like for the past, now Ghost Whites, he took some chances. You bring in Jeff Tate, mm-hmm. you bring in Dee Snider on a track. You take some chances on things that could blow up in your face. But he's
Tobias, doubled down on Jeff Tate on this album.
See, that's the thing. Sometimes Tobias does things, and I think because Auventation has become such a big touring entity, it's like, well, I know I can get this guy for the tour. I know I can get him for this tour and for future tours.
So let's create something
so
for him on the album.
I'm going to just go ahead and have him on the album instead of taking a bigger risk and grabbing some other guest like a Devin Townsend or something to be on this record who I know I couldn't get on the tour for, you know, their 20-day tour or whatever. And sometimes I think that's drawing back it's holding back the potential of his music. You know, because in the old days, okay, for even on the Scarecrow in 2008, he had freaking Roy Kahn. He had Alice Cooper.
Yep.
He never had those guys on stage with him, but he just went ahead and said, you know what? I'm going to have these guys in the album. I'll find a replacement for the touring
situation. John Oliva, come on.
He had John Oliva. And
that song, it has a special place for me.
And Jorn, you know, who's like his tried and tested touring partner, can sing the song live. It doesn't have to be, you know, Alice Cooper singing that song live or something. So that's... Bringing Jeff Tate on back for the second time in a row, it worked last time, and we all praised that track. The Jeff Tate songs in this record didn't work as well.
No, agreed.
And it's like, just because you found Jeff to be a fun guy to tour with and you guys had a good experience together, I'm glad that happened. But you don't have to double down on it just for the convenience sake that Jeff Tate needs a gig and he'll take a gig. You know, if he's going to get to play these huge venues in Europe that he can't play on his own. I don't know. That's just like one criticism that I've had, and I think a lot of other people have had too, of like the guest list on the album. So,
so last weekend we got together, had a little get together. We watched a certain movie.
Yeah,
something. This is the second time you had seen the movie. The first time I had seen it, we watched a little movie called Lords of Chaos. And I want to talk about it, but I want to actually get into a set list here. We're going to play something from Mayhem. We picked out something early Mayhem from De Mysterious Don Satanas.
Mm-hmm.
The song you picked out, From the Dark Past.
Yep.
Great song. And then we're going to get into something completely different than that. And then we're going to get into our discussion on the movie and what we feel about it and what other people feel about it from what I've read.
Yeah.
So let's get into that, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. can shed this skin. We can know how we feel inside. Instead of going down an endless road, not knowing if we're dead or
Welcome back to MSR Cast 217, and I don't know what with love from hell with love. Who's giving you the love?
Somebody from hell. It's the bad place.
So you know the thing with Beast in Black is that like we're new to this band because yes. we just got into them like
last album.
Yeah, like almost a couple months ago.
It feels like it.
And
it was late. It was middle of 2018.
Since that time period, because it was kind of an accident when we stumbled upon them. I've learned that this band is the center of a raging controversy in the power metal community.
Are they? I can see why with this album.
Well, no, I mean just in general, even with before this album came out. Like I've heard so many "are they power metal or not" arguments about this band in particular, them and Sabaton, like. Where people are just saying, no, this is the dividing line. Bands like Sabaton and Beast in Black, they represent like something like more akin to, say, arena metal than power metal. They're very – this needs to be a line of demarcation. There are people who really are militant about this. And I argue the opposite. They go, guys, power metal can sound like a lot of things. It can sound like, you know, a band like Pharaoh or a band like Blind Guardian or Falconer or Iced Earth or whatever. Or something like Power Quest, you know, really shimmery and shiny like that. And so if this is like the more slick, polished kind of arena-ish end of the spectrum, it's still power metal because it's, you know, the roots of it are in there. And I think that this Beast in Black album has more power metal-y stuff than the last album does. But at the same time, this is an 80s...
This is 80s cheese fest.
This is an 80s, an ode to the 80s.
Oh, fuck yes. Them and... what's the other beast? Not Beast in Black.
But Battle Beast.
Battle Beast.
Yeah, like
they're basically the same band with a different vocalist. One's female, one's male.
Well,
the male hits those high notes, anyways. But
yeah, so the Beast in Black is the former guitarist of Battle Beast, his project.
Oh, that's after right. No wonder why they went their separate
ways. Yeah, yeah.
Had to keep Beast in that name, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and by all accounts, the new Battle Beast is going to be as much an 80s-inspired affair.
It is.
Yeah.
It totally is.
And their last album was very much along the same lines, too.
I think I saw them live a couple years ago.
Both of these bands are turning out records really fast, because like, I think the last Battle Beast was last year, or
2017.
Maybe 2017.
In 2017.
So the turnaround on these albums is fast. The reason why, here's the thing. Straight up, I love the new Beast in Black. It's just, I don't take it seriously. You're not supposed to take it seriously. It's just a fun record to listen to. It's like the equivalent of Cheetos. It's the equivalent of Cheetos. Like the most, like it's delicious in the moment and you regret it immediately.
What if you get the baked Cheetos?
I don't think I've ever had those.
They taste just the same.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It's just junk food. It's just musical junk food.
There's a lot of bands like that.
But it's kind of like nice in the moment when you just want something instantaneously catchy and really done well in that sense of instantaneously catchy.
But you like a lot more of those those bands than I do, like Delane, and there's a couple other ones that I listen to, and I'm like, Sean loves this.
I only like one Delane album. The thing with Beast in Black is that they do harken back to this kind of 80s sensibility that I do appreciate, mm-hmm. where it's just unabashedly bold and pop and that kind of thing, you know, like Scorpions and stuff, and Europe, that kind of thing, all these weird influences and stuff, you know. This song that we played, No Easy Way Out, if you've watched Rocky IV, you'll recognize the song. And it's a Robert Tepper cover. No one knows who Robert Tepper is.
I don't think Robert Tepper even knows who he is.
One of these generic 80s singers who kind of had like a Michael Bolton looking appearance and could have been like the next Michael Bolton or something. Anyway, but the reason why I picked the cover rather than one of the originals on the album was that it kind of fits this album. Like they just kind of included it. I'm not even sure it was a bonus track. It's just sort of like, this is our touchstone. Like there's a reason why they included this song on the album. It's like, this is the kind of stuff we want to do. And I think that's great. And I was telling you about how I was in the grocery store the other day and I heard Cheap Trick's The Flame going. Yes. And I'm like, what a great song. I forgot about that
song.
Amazing
song.
And it's like, sometimes I just kind of like appreciate that there's a band doing just overtly, you know, unironic kind of stuff like that right now. And Beast in Black is that band. And I know there's a lot of people in the power metal community, some of these guys know who I'm referring to, who hate this band.
I'm not going to use that word hate.
I don't get the hate.
I don't get it either. I mean, I really liked their last album that came out.
Yeah.
This one hasn't really grabbed me at all, but
this one's, here's what I think comparing this one to the last one was really showboaty in a lot of sense. Like they would showcase Mr. Papadopoulos's vocal range, you know, like exceptionally well on certain songs. And this one just feels more of like a cohesive band. We're just here for the catchy choruses type
sure.
thing. Cause the last time, remember those videos, it was really just about putting the singer up front, letting his vocal theatrics kind of take over everything.
Yes.
This is more about the hook, I think.
So, you know, a band is totally not like Beast in Black. The band we played before that.
Yeah.
Totally opposite.
That we put these two things together.
Yes. So this is, let's talk about, we played Mayhem from the classic De Mysterious Dom Satanas.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about our feelings on this polarizing film. I would say it's very, I don't want to say controversial, but I know a lot of people that love it, and I know fucking a lot of people that vehemently hate it. Where do you fit in this category? What did you feel about the movie?
I really loved it. Yeah,
me too.
And I thought that maybe watching it a second time would maybe alter my impression of it, but I think it just reinforced everything I liked about it the first time.
So first thing you got to know, if you haven't seen it yet, it's a fictionalized movie, okay? It's a fictionalized movie based on a sort of true story, truth and lies type of story. So there are some truths to it, and there are some lies, and there's some Hollywoodized shit that was made up to make it into a cohesive movie.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get that out of the way first. I thought it was well shot. It was well done. I thought I was going to hate Rory Culkin as Euronymous, and I didn't. I thought he did a pretty damn good job. The guy who played Varg, totally not like Varg, but I didn't think he did a bad job in that role. It's a very hard role to have to wrap your mind around, you know what I mean?
I think Emery Cohen is the guy's name. I thought he did like a really good job at selling the fact of how goofy Varg, or Christian as he was back then, was at first, and how his character changed, you know? Whether or not he looked like Varg is entirely debatable, but
it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, Rory Culkin doesn't really look like Euronymous.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he looks like Macaulay Culkin playing with black metal makeup.
Right. I mean, I
couldn't get over that. That was the first thing I'm like, wow, he fucking looks like Macaulay Culkin right. so much.
Rory Culkin's performance was really good, though.
I think
really
so too.
Excellent, yeah.
My biggest complaint about the movie is it's when they jumped from after starting the band, and then all of a sudden there was just like a little quick aside, and like, oh yeah, my dad gave me money to open a record store. So I opened a record store. I'm like, where the fuck did that come from? I know they just, it felt like they skipped a lot there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which they did, but, the guy who played Dead, wow, man, that's a tough role you have to get into. And you know who that was, right?
Yeah, it's Val Kilmer's
kid. Val Kilmer's son, yeah. Jack Kilmer, looks just like his dad. After I like realized that, I'm like, oh yeah, it is. Definitely looks like him.
Yeah, he got
old Val Kilmer.
He really got that kind of. No one really. I mean, there's not a lot known about like Dead, like in terms of like what for to the metal community or anything. But like, he really got he really played the part of this guy who's just sort of detached from life a little bit and kind of floating through it, you know, in depression and stuff or whatever.
So this movie does not shy away from the violence, the gore.
No.
Just from scenes of like Dead cutting his arms open on stage and stuff like that. And I'm like, I mean, they really show him cutting his arms open. It's like flesh splitting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And some of the scenes, I mean, it's uncomfortable, yes. But I think it was needed. It was definitely needed for the story and for the movie to make sense of how fucked up it really was.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the stabbings and stuff like that, and spoiler alert, if you don't know the story, the suicide scene was Dead. That. They stayed on shots longer than I thought they were going to. They showed more. And then when Euronymous shows up, it's like, wow, okay, they actually really took a chance and showed more than they could have. And everybody thinks the story is all about the burning of the churches. That was a very small part of the story, but it was, I think it was a prominent and an important part of the story. That you couldn't have without it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the story of, I hate to say it this way, it's the story of the band. You think of this genre, you think of people that are not into metal, they don't know the history, they don't know what really happened. That's the first thing people think of. It's like, oh, they burned a bunch of churches. And of course you have to show that in the movie, but it wasn't, I don't think it was as violent in the movie as it could have been. You know, they made it, hey, this is the fun thing that we want to do.
Yeah.
Let's just burn this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could have been any type of building, but a church was just the easiest building. They were just rebelling. They were against anti-establishment. It was like, oh, a church, we fucking hate religion. Let's just burn it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
They could have done the same thing to a fucking government building or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I think it's that type of thing, but I think those are really well done too. Yeah. I want the Blu-ray so I can watch the making of how they did a lot of this shit, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I did watch an interview with the director, Jonas,
mm-hmm.
and he said that some of it, he actually bought a church, an empty church.
I read about that.
But some of it was also, he said one of the churches they used was, a set a piece from Blade Runner 2049, like a miniature piece that he bought, and he burned that.
Wow.
I was like, that's sort of interesting and cool.
That's cool, yeah. I think there's two ways to look at this movie, and unfortunately we're metalheads, so we're looking at it from that perspective. And someone like me, I read the book a long time ago, and I remember when I first read the book, I'm shocked, and after a time I read more interviews that discredit the book, and I go, okay, the book's a piece of crap, whatever. But there are always little bits of truth in the book. Like one of the things that John pointed out to me, a friend of mine, he's like, remember in the book how they had that whole thing about the girl who was supposedly dating both Euronymous and Varg.
Right.
And she went to Sweden, all these like, you know, supposed poser death metal, quote unquote, life metal bands that Euronymous would rail against. And so she went to the house of Christopher Johnson from Therion.
Oh, yeah.
And put like a burning, I think, yeah, she set fire to like a cross and nailed it to his door or something. And it was like a, you know, this thing that's in the book, this incident that he described, and he's kind of unfazed by. He's like, whatever, these Norwegian idiots or whatever. And Varg like hated like Therion for some reason. Like they really just hated him, and Therion was just kind of like whatever. but anyway, so they had this kind of woman who just kind of disappears in this story, mm-hmm. and he was like, "What if she was the inspiration for the girl?"
She had to be because,
and I was like, "Yeah, they did read the fucking book for to get some of the source material."
Yeah, the girlfriend in the movie, you know, you have to have some kind of Hollywoodized love story in something like this, right. No matter what.
I think her character's main role was to kind of humanize Euronymous a little bit.
Yes.
And
I think it did, and it did its job.
And to dehumanize Varg, especially in that one uncomfortable scene where he's ordering her around. And the thing is...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Like, the reviews I've been the most interested with this movie are the people who are not metal fans looking at the movie, because I want to know what they're thinking.
Exactly right. Because I've been on Facebook after it came out, and I've seen people that fucking vehemently hate this movie and saying because it's a piece of shit. And I've seen people that have, you know, that really like it. Like me, I enjoyed the movie for what it was. I'm not going to pretend that I was around during that time. That was like fucking 1987.
Right.
Between 87 and 89, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I was like 12 or 13, you know. Not going to pretend that I was into that shit back then. I didn't know the people. I don't know the people involved. I don't know how they really are, what the story is. All I know is I've read the book, and I've heard stories, and I've read interviews. That's as much as I know. And this movie, it's a movie. It's not a documentary. Get that out of your head right away. It's not a documentary about what happened. That's Until the Light Takes Us. This is a movie, beautifully shot. There were some amazing shots in this movie. It looked really good. The acting was good. I think everything about it surpassed what I was actually expecting out of a film. Well-made movie.
And there is
if you agree with it or disagree with the story, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, and there is no real straight-ahead Norwegian black metal documentary. The closest thing is the thing that Sam Dunn did, where he one of the episodes that he did for that Metal Evolution and Metal A Headbanger's Journey, like the little behind-the-scenes footage type stuff. Because Until the Light Takes Us was a commentary on how black metal culture has been appropriated, and so the attitude of Until the Light Takes Us would be critical of this movie even coming out.
Yeah.
This movie is just a story.
Until the Light Takes Us goes more in depth and the details about that era.
But Until the Light Takes Us is now, because you look back and you're kind of guilty of lionizing Varg a little bit, giving him a lot of screen time to kind of espouse his philosophy. And what I like about this movie is it really swings the pendulum back to Euronymous a little bit, who's kind of been this forgotten, kind of demeaned figure in black metal history, and it's kind of like made you think of him in a different way. Whether it's entirely true or not, it at least gives you the possibility you can think about it in a different way. And the thing that what I see most criticism coming from the metal scene is just people who are Varg fanboys.
Yeah.
Basically just talking about how this makes Varg look bad. Well, guess what? Varg is an asshole, and he was a murderer, and he is a piece of shit.
He was in jail for this shit.
And he is unrepentant about it. He's just someone who doesn't deserve any type of sympathy at all, in my opinion. And so I like the idea that Euronymous was the central figure of this movie, and I like the fact that the movie's ultimate theme was to say, like, you know, this is kind of a tragic story just overall about what happened to these group of kids who just took rebellion way too far. And it went to murder and church burnings and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it's like, if you're a non-metal person, I like really interesting indie films. I'm going to go watch this movie. What are you going to take away from this movie? Oh, that fucking Varg is an asshole and Euronymous is awesome. No, you're going to take away the fact of like, this is like the most senseless bunch. If this is based on a true story, this is incredibly senseless. And those scenes you were talking about, the violence, like mm-hmm. Nothing was stylized about any of those, like the suicide, the murders, the church burning, like nothing was really stylized. Especially the murder scene in the park where Faust stabs the guy, and he stabbed him in real life 37 times. I swear to God, it felt like they showed every stab wound. And when the final confrontation between Varg and Euronymous is just so awful and so bloody, you're just kind of like, all right, enough, you know, just cut away. Like, I'm done watching this. it's supposed to be uncomfortable because it's just so senseless. You know
what it reminds me of? Totally. It's like on Family Guy when they stay on a joke way too long just to prove a point.
Yeah.
Like when Peter Griffin hurts himself and he's just for a minute and a half. You're just all right, enough. But they do it to prove a point, and I think that's exactly where the filmmaker was going in this movie.
Yeah, I like
that. That's a weird comparison, I'm sorry, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the dead suicide scene. It's gross to watch what he's doing. And he does his wrists and his neck, and it's just kind of like, God, cut away, please.
This movie, I'm not going to get into any details here on the show, but this movie it hit very close to home to me, because a couple of the deaths in this movie I've experienced very close to me in real life. Totally same thing. And I'm not getting into any details. I can tell you about it offline, but so it was very weird to me. I'm like, oh, well, I'm seeing something that I've only can imagine of happening to people that I was close to, you know?
Yeah. Well, cause it was just weird.
It was weird for me to see that.
Cause I mean, the thing with Jonas Acker, when you think about the music videos he's directed, the Metallica Turn the Page, the Prodigy Smack My Bitch Up, that kind of visceral style, he brought that to the scenes of violence in this movie. And to his credit, he brought it kind of to the scenes of trying to make these guys look like ordinary dudes. Like when he's sitting at home and his mother's calling for dinner and she's specifying the dish and it's like, oh, yeah, I made your favorite. It's kind of like, yeah, I know. I believe that happened. And it's just so funny that he would be so make a point to include that in the movie.
Because it humanizes him.
It humanizes these, and the scene where he's with his Euronymous is with his sister, and they're kind of goofing around. It's I like all those little things, and some people who put these guys on pedestals, Euronymous and Varg, the founders of black metal. It's they're not going to like that stuff,
dude. But not everybody can be on 24 hours a day,
right?
People that play characters or whatever, they still have a real life. They go through the same shit that we go through by eating food and that's what's my favorite food and hanging out with her family. And it just doesn't, it humanized him in a way that I think really worked because it didn't really make a certain character out to be a hero.
Right.
But you did feel sympathy towards him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I sort of even Euronymous sitting in his record store and the postman comes in.
Yeah.
And he goes, is this Deathlike Silence, productions? And Euronymous is like, yeah, Deathlike Silence. He's like, oh, that's us. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Postman. Yeah. because that's what you want to piss off the postman.
Right. Because he delivers all your shit.
Right.
So, not going to have any shit to sell in your store if you don't.
I liked how gritty the movie was. And I think Jonas Acker was the best director they could have had for this movie. So.
I think so.
Highly recommend. It's really cheap to rent it. I think it's $3.99 or something. So
we rented it on Amazon. It was $5.99.
Okay, yeah,
$4.99, something like that. But I definitely will be picking up the Blu-ray of this when it comes out.
Yeah, I'll buy it. Yeah,
I want it for my collection, and I want to see all the behind the scenes stuff, which is what really interests me on these type of movies. You want to move on?
Yeah.
So that's our review. Quickly, go see it. If it's still in the theater, I recommend seeing in the theater.
It was fun to go see it in the theater.
It's on all the streaming services, all that kind of stuff. So you have no excuse that you can't see it. Go to YouTube. I'm sure you can find it for free.
Right, someone's put it up there.
Yeah. Let's talk about this next band. They're not Mayhem, are they?
No, these guys are I'm sure no one really knows about them because there's only their second album. They came out in 2016 with their debut, which is kind of shaky, but it was this is interesting. This band has some potential. And then this album's really them showing I can see this direction. They're kind of a mix of Orden Ogan and Blind Guardian.
No wonder why you like them.
Just kind of that's the approach they're taking, and they're pretty damn good songwriters too. Yeah. And the album's just kind of punchy and fun, and there's not a lot of wasted space. They don't really go into a lot of progressive directions.
I haven't really heard this, so we're actually going to check it out now and give me a chance to make an opinion.
Yeah.
Check it out. So this is Thornbridge. The song you picked is Revelation from the album Theatrical Masterpiece. Well, that's egotistical already, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's find out if it is a masterpiece. And we are back to the show, and we just got our fucking Doom on.
Yes.
Candlemass, new album called The Door to Doom. The song we heard was Black Trinity, and this is the first album featuring original vocalist Johan Lenquist on vocals, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of this band in all their incarnations, all the different vocalists. So, I mean, I really love Messiah. I really loved Rob Lowe. I really liked Matt Levin in the band. I thought he fit really, really well.
Yeah.
But I also like Johan Lundqvist because fucking OG, you know?
Right,
yeah. OD, original Doom.
Yeah.
But so let's talk about the album a little bit. I really want to like this album more than I do. I really do. I like it a lot.
Right.
But it hasn't blown me away like I was hoping it would. It's a good album. Don't get me wrong. It's fucking doomy. Especially the song we just heard. I really liked that song a lot. Black Trinity. There's a song that has Tony Iommi on it.
Yeah.
Doing some guitar stuff. I actually pre-ordered the Digipak version that came autographed by the band, which is pretty cool. Nice addition to the collection, you know what I mean?
It's, you know, the thing, and I've gone through this album a couple times, mm-hmm. and it just seems like there will always be little moments throughout it where I perk up and I'm like, all right, yeah, that's really cool. And those moments are spread a little bit too far apart. And then everything that's like, you know, some of the stuff that's in the middle there, it's just like... there are parts that I think maybe are a little too, I don't know, meandering's not the right word, because it's not like they're long or anything, but sometimes stuff just goes on too long, and I just feel like it's a little bit unfocused and needs a little bit more of a quicker point from point A to B, you know, a quicker path.
Open that door to Doom quicker?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a weird criticism to make about Doom, but then Candlemass isn't really what we consider Doom in the sense of like... what we know it to be now, you know, of what it's become, you know, like when I hear this album, I hear old Doom.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know? Candlemass is one of the purveyors of Doom. They are one of the first bands that I think of when I think of Doom music, Doom metal.
Yeah.
Candlemass comes to mind. They're one of my top three Doom metal bands of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, you know, I like all incarnations of the band. I mean, you still have Leif doing most of the lyrics and, you know, songwriting and stuff like that. So it feels like Candlemass, but I don't know. And there's a couple songs on here that were on the last EP. The one I can think of, House of Doom, which the Matt Levin version of that song, I enjoy immensely more.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more later. What, you know, here. It's a little bit more peppier, has that little bit of more pep.
It's sharper.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's due to the fact that maybe Mats Levin just a more crisper singer or something.
I don't think that's it. I think it feels like with getting Johan back in the band, Johan, whatever you want to say, they wanted to go back to their roots. And even a song like House of Doom has a little bit of different tempo and cadence.
Yeah.
Between the two versions.
Yeah.
And I think they really were trying to incorporate that. Here's what we did on Epicus type of stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's where they might have fallen a little flat, but not really. It's weird. I'm very polarized by this album. I like it, but then I don't like it, and then I like it again, then I don't like it. It's very weird to me.
Yeah. It's hard. Well, it's hard to identify why it feels that way. I mean, the only thing I can point to is that maybe just some of the songwriting wasn't that sharp or something, but...
Maybe. I haven't figured it out. I haven't pinpointed yet.
It does feel like when I listen... the only thing I can tell you is that when I am listening to it, there are moments where I forget I'm listening to it sometimes. So that's not always the best sign for a record. I mean, there was some music you want that to happen, but not this. So
I'm looking through the credits here. Backup vocals were actually done by Matt Levin on this album.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They probably had stuff already.
Laying around, yeah.
It's pretty cool. So that's the new Candlemass. I definitely will be listening to it much, much more.
Yeah.
And before that, we heard Thornbridge.
Yeah.
More? More? Come on. I definitely see why you enjoy this so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like another Odin Orgon, but just a little more, a little less icing on the top. It's a little more, you know, grittier in the bottom end and stuff like that. It's just, you know, I like it. It's a straight ahead kind of good German power metal. And
yeah,
it's one of these things that would just, there's so much great power metal coming out right now. It's coming out from all corners of the world. We're going to be playing another band later on in the show that's from another band from the eternal wellspring of power metal, Canada. And this is a new band from Germany. So it's just like there's stuff, you know, Ancient Bards on their last episode from Italy.
Yep.
There's good power metal coming out all over the place right now. I mean, this is the time to pay attention.
Indeed.
Right now.
I do want to mention something. If you're in Houston I'm looking at the date here, Saturday, March 30th, there's going to be a benefit for the family of Bruce Corbett from Rigor Mortis, who recently passed away. It's called You Know Damn Well. It's going to be at Rudyard's British Pub, which is a great little club here in Houston. They have a bar and a restaurant downstairs. And
good
upstairs.
Food.
I have never actually eaten there.
Oh, it's good food.
There's truthfully, at the corner at the there's a little convenience store
that
has a Greek restaurant in there, like a Mediterranean restaurant.
Oh, really?
Fucking great.
You mean the little place next to it?
Yes, totally.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we've actually my friend who lives in the area, we go over to his house sometimes. We'll actually order food from there and bring it over.
Huh.
It's really good.
They let you walk in with that?
No. I mean, we're at his house.
Oh, gotcha.
Well, but it's right next door. We've gone there before.
Yeah.
But going back to the benefit, it's pretty cool. You're gonna have a bunch of great local bands: Fiddlewitch and the Demons of Doom, The Scourge, Scroll Keeper, Mastema, Sanctus Bellum is doing a reunion show, and then James Rivera's Metal Asylum, which is. He does all the Scorpions and, you know.
That's cool.
He does a lot of Judas Priest and a lot of Black Sabbath, all that kind of stuff. So it's $15 to get in. All proceeds are going to go to the family of Bruce Corbett to pay for bills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I will definitely be there.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
Yeah. The show's at 6:30, so it's an earlier show on a Saturday, 21 and up. Be there. Help support the family of Bruce Corbett, if you are in the Houston area. And then this coming weekend, there's a...
it's in Fort Worth,
in
right?
Fort Worth, yeah.
On the 9th.
It's a Ridge Lea. Is it the name of the right name?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
A club up there in Fort Worth are doing a benefit show, a tribute show to Bruce, which I won't be able to get to, but I'll be at this one and you know, give my money and whatever else I can do to help out, you know what I mean? Let's talk about something. I've never hid this. I'm a huge fan of the Monkees, right?
Right.
Nobody who listens to the show or Metal Geeks doesn't know that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, last week, one of the remaining Monkees passed away. The guy's name was Peter Tork. He was a great songwriter, great blues musician. He was a phenomenal musician. He was like, when they put the band together, the TV show, whatever you want to say, he was one of the an amazing guitar player, bass player. He played the piano, he plays the banjo, he plays all these different instruments, you know. He didn't sing that much with the band, and in his career he only wrote like 20 songs, but something around there. But he was a phenomenal musician. I've seen him live with the Monkees a few times, and I saw him do a two-man band show, which is other artist, which was back in the late 90s, which was a lot of fun.
He's an original Monkey, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So he got diagnosed with cancer 9-10 years ago, went into remission. It was a tongue cancer. It definitely changed his vocals and his cadence and stuff like that, but I've said cadence way too many times in this episode. I don't know why that word is just stuck in my head right now, but I'm definitely gonna miss a guy. It hit me hard. Anytime if one of your idols leaves this world, it hits you hard. And I wanted to pay some kind of tribute to him. So one of the songs he played guitar with in the Monkees was a song called Last Train to Clarksville, which is one of their...
I know this song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everyone knows this song,
it's
right?
It's one of their, you know, top hits, you know, made them... It was their very first hit, made them what they really are. But we're not going to play their version, of course. That wouldn't fit in a heavy metal-based show. So we're going to play a band from the 80s, late 80s, called Ludachrist. They did a great version of Last Train to Clarksville on their first album called Immaculate Deception.
Hmm.
Do you know who this band is, Ludachrist?
No.
Do you remember a band called Scatterbrain?
I've heard the name.
So Scatterbrain came out in the early 90s, and they did the song Down with the Ship, and they used to play it on Z-Rock all the time. It's like, oh, they played different parts from different bands and stuff like that. You had to call in and pick, you figure out if you right. knew all the different songs. But Ludachrist disbanded in 1989. They temporarily reformed in like 2007-ish and again. So they only had two albums, Immaculate Deception and then Power Trip. And definitely these are their thrash, you know, punk mashup, you know, crossover is what you would call it. I was a huge fan of Ludachrist and a huge fan of Scatterbrain, even after they sort of completely did a 180 and they did more comedic based music. Yeah. But I remember specifically sneaking out of my house as a kid to go to Fitzgerald to see Scatterbrain live on a school night.
Damn.
Yeah. It was that important for me to see them live. Only time they ever came to town, ever.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into Ludachrist. This is their version of the Monkees song, Last Train to Clarksville, from the album Immaculate Deception. This is from 1986, so check it out. And rest in peace, or rest in power to Peter Tork. We'll be right back.
welcome back to MSR Cast 217. And a pair of heretics here talking about the album, The Heretics.
So that was from Ludachrist to Rotting Christ.
Yeah.
Wasn't even planned that way, but we had a couple of Christ in that. That's weird.
Heretical band names. Yep. From one to the other.
Well, yeah, because one album is The Heretics and the other one was Immaculate Deception.
Right. Yeah.
So there you go.
The Rotting Christ album, The Heretics.
I'm surprised.
It really surprised the hell out of me because, so the last album I wasn't that thrilled about, but the one before that I was a big fan of.
Yeah.
This is a weird band for me because I always go back and forth with them and stuff. My last interaction with Rotting Christ was actually seeing them open for Mayhem at Warehouse Live.
Oh, yeah.
And being like, okay, this is really good. Like, it's good. I kind of wish they'd play more of the stuff from that one album. And I don't know. Sometimes I hear this band and I'm just disinterested in what they do. And then other times that when they really bring in the folk elements and all the weird kind of Greek, you know, different things, it's just like, this is one of the most interesting bands in metal. And this album has really blown me away. And I've only just started listening to it a couple of days ago, but it's been on constant rotation ever since. And this is my favorite song on the record. I love whoever this female vocalist is. I haven't done any research on this album yet. Whoever that singer is fantastic. They've used female vocals before on other things, and I always like when they do it. They're just really creative, and the song structures are weird, and I can't really put my head around where this music is coming from influence-wise. It's just bizarre. But epic, and this is an album to watch because... so far this year for me, the standouts really have been that Swallow the Sun, that Hell of Vorn, and honestly, like, maybe it's too early to say this just from listening to it for 2 days now, but maybe this.
Wow.
So, I'm really, really, really pumped up about this record.
I'm looking for,
they have a long and sordid discography.
Arina Zabina, vocals on track 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably just some Greek lady who they know of. Yeah. Yeah. The thing they made these bands in like different countries, just finding just different awesome talent to just like, yeah, you'll be on the album. It's like, you know, I'm kind of hoping that the new Marath album will have some of that kind of, you know, surprise.
Yeah. I've heard a couple songs from that album so far.
Yeah.
This is the first album in what, a couple of years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean they're steadily putting albums out since the early 90s. So.
Yeah.
I know Dave Mustaine refuses to tour with them, so
yeah.
They must be doing something well.
Yeah. I mean they got the most press from that, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
It was almost better than playing the show.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Negative press is sometimes better than good press.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. So before that, we heard Ludachrist doing the cover of the Monkees' Last Train to Clarksville from the 1986 album, Immaculate Deception. I was a huge fan of these guys. And then when they changed their name into Scatterbrain when they were doing their third album, just to avoid any not being carried in record store type of stuff. So, yeah. But yeah, if you haven't checked out, they're one of the great thrash crossover bands from that era. Of course, the second album, they started getting a little bit more comedic in nature and not taking themselves so seriously, and they continued that on with the Scatterbrain albums and were early success on like Z-Rock back in the day, that type of stuff. So.
Yeah.
That's where I knew him from, and I was a big fan.
I was saying that's their singer sounded like a mix of like Lemmy and Chuck Mosley.
Yeah,
you know,
I could see that.
It's weird that kind of like you were saying crossover, like when they start doing the comedic stuff. It's to me in my memory. I know there's bands that still do it today, but it really is such like an early '90s vibe for me,
sure.
Where it's just like I remember I grew up listening to stuff like this, where like. You know, like I would listen to a band like Primus a lot.
Yeah, I still love Primus.
Right. I mean, I probably still would if I went back and listened to them, but it's just,
yeah,
that was like a thing where when you were that age and that stuff would come out, it felt right to listen to it.
Actually, the the new Claypool Lennon Delirium album. Really weird, but really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Is he still doing the kind of comedic bent on it?
There's a little bit, yeah. It's a little more psychedelic, trippy.
It's weird. This doesn't make me look bad saying this, but I think that when I grew up a little bit, that the comedic stuff just seemed really juvenile to me. And I think, and that's not a criticism towards that. It's more of a criticism towards me, because I think what it is that music really just for me worked better when I was that age where I was receptive to it. And then later on, when I started listening to like Therion and serious stuff like that, it was hard for me to go back and turn the switch and go back and go, ah, I appreciate this, you know?
Well, remember, I guess that, I never fully grew up then.
Remember that song, Peaches by the Presidents of the United States of America?
I do remember that song.
Okay, I remember when every kid in like
middle school,
he probably did. I remember every freaking kid in middle school, like in my classes, everyone would be like humming that song and like singing the lyrics of that song, and it was just like a thing that everyone knew and it was, like, thought it was really funny. And peaches come from a can, and you listen to that song in retrospect, you're just like, what a stupid fucking song that was.
But it was an earworm.
But for eighth grade mentality, it was just like, I don't know. Yeah. You just took a little bit more.
I
like,
was definitely
to heart.
Older than that. But
yeah.
Yeah, I think you would actually like both the bands, Ludacris and then Scatterbrain.
I liked what I heard. Yeah,
yeah. Give them a shot. I mean, I think you'll go back and listen to. There's like five albums to listen to, so it's fun stuff.
The cover of Last Train to Clarksville really did seem like a Motorhead attitude type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like Motorhead has some weird ass covers in their catalog.
Oh yeah, they do. The first Ludacris album was definitely a little bit more. Not serious, because I mean they fucking covered that, and they cover Green Eggs and Ham with like a rap part in it. But you know it, yeah. I definitely recommend these. It's one of my. I haven't actually listened to these guys in a while, so I'm gonna go back and like re-listen to all the albums probably this week now.
Every time I hear Green Eggs and Ham now, I think about that Pete Holmes stand-up bit where his stand-up bit Pete Green Eggs and Ham. It's on the HBO app. If you ever get a chance to watch his stand-up special, it's pretty funny.
So what do we have coming up next?
So is it Black Therapy?
It is Black Therapy.
So this is the band that kind of you were playing before we started recording that kind of sounds like Morris Principium est, right?
I think so. They definitely...
I liked what I heard.
They have that same kind of guitar riffing style and sort of mellow death. The new album is called Echoes of Dying Memories. I really like these guys. They're on Black Lion Records.
You know what it is? That style, that Morris style. It's like when you have one of the guitarists is doing some kind of sustained melodic pattern in the back, and then there's all this rhythmic changes up front.
Yeah.
So it's like part of the song's moving, and then part of it's just staying still. I love that effect.
I agree.
It's such a classic Melodeth effect, and not a lot of bands still do.
And they do it good.
Yeah.
They do it well. So this band is on Black Lion Records, the same record label that has Meadows End, which is one of my darling albums so far this year. Man,
what's the name of the label?
Black Lion Records.
Yeah.
These are...
kind of a rising star, it seems
like. I think, for me, they definitely are, because both of these bands... are surprise fucking hits for me this year so far.
Yeah,
I really like this album. It comes out in a couple of weeks, March 11th, to the full length. So you're getting a little bit of a preview here. The song we're going to pick is called Phoenix Rising. It's the first song on the album. I really enjoy these guys.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to listen to this.
But while we're talking about Moors, I want to say. That a couple weeks ago we discovered the Andy Gillian, their guitar player they brought in, right?
Yeah.
He has a YouTube channel that he started off a long time ago just doing guitar covers and, you know, wankery and that type of stuff. But he's been vlogging recently on different tours with Morris Principium Est. Like the first one we watched was like 70K from this past year. And then last weekend we watched the whole thing where when we saw them on tour through America. They're really funny. If you want to see what a band really is like on tour in America or around the world, go watch the go to the Andy Gillion is G-I-L-L-I-O-N his YouTube page and watch these more specific MS tour videos. They're funny. They're really engaging. And like the singer Ville, there's this catchy thing they do because he's always complaining and moping around. So they have this thing. It's like Ville, and he's like moping around the world. And it's just the funniest fucking thing. And like on the American tour, he's like going, "Hey Ville, you gonna mope around today?" He's like, "No, America. I love America." It's just, I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, he's got a great personality. I actually discovered his vlog stuff like 2 years ago when they first did the 70,000 tons thing. Yeah? And I was just like, "Oh, that guy's entertaining. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see them live."
Yeah,
I hope, because he's like the new guy in the band.
Yeah.
And like the only British guy in the band. And so he has like the most totally. Personality of all these dour Finnish people and stuff.
Yep.
You know who else is good tour vlog wise, if you want to watch, and they're kind of a couple tours ago, but Amanda Somerville was the backing, the female backing vocalist for Avantasia when they were touring all across the world.
Oh, really?
I think on the 2008 tour and the 2010 tour.
Yeah.
She, and the 12 tour, they did these like big tours, and she would vlog every one of them.
Really?
And her vlogs are entertaining because you get behind the scenes footage of Tobias and Jorn, and everyone's drunk and
nice. And I have to watch it with them.
Yeah, they're great. She's really good.
Her channel?
Her, yeah, YouTube channel. Yeah.
We watched another 70K from this year this morning. It was Gear Gods. They did a vlog. They just put it out. I gotta tell you, dude, I want to go on a 70,000 tons of metal cruise.
Yeah.
Because me and my wife, we love going on cruises, and we love metal.
Yeah,
It's a totally different experience than just going on a normal relaxing cruise,
right?
Because there's like, one of the bands is playing like 3 a.m. You're like, fuck it, let's just stay up and watch them. You know what I mean?
From everything I've seen from the pictures, it's like if you do want to relax on these cruises, you can. There's places. It doesn't seem like people do because they're always empty whenever they're taking pictures near there. It's like there's like a big ass deck full of like empty chairs and there's empty.
Well, the main stage they build on the ship is on the pool deck. They cover the pool and they have the big stage there. So it's outside on the ship, but they still have like the hot tubs open so you can hang out and watch the bands in the hot tub.
Yeah.
And the one, there's a bunch of people thrashing around while Camelot was playing on the main stage. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I want to go. Yeah. I know it's expensive, but, you know, it looks like it's worth it to me.
Yeah.
So let's go back to Black Therapy. This is the song Phoenix Rising from the album Echoes of Dying Memories on Black Line Records. Please check them out. Let us know what you think about any of the bands that we play on the show. Email us, msrcast@gmail.com, or find us on our social media at MSRcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and you can find also the Metal Pigeon on all those social media platforms.
Yes.
Let us know what you think about the bands that we play on the show. If you discover anything new, if you have something for us that you want us to check out. And this is something we've been talking about for a long time. We want one of our fans of the show to program a whole episode for us. So you pick all the bands and we get to comment on it.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. So if you want to do that, send an email to msrcast@gmail.com and we're going to schedule that out soon.
Take a lot of the workload off our plate.
I know, right? We'll just show up and fucking record.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So check it out. We'll be right back.
To see what's true, it's all up to you.
Welcome back to MSR Cast 217.
Why, thank you. It's good to be back.
We just watched a video in the little interim for, was that Scattered Brains?
Or yeah, that was Scattered Brain.
Okay. That was sneakily one of the best videos I've ever seen a rock band do.
Okay. Surprised you would say that.
It was just like, so, it was funny. Yep. But, like, it's rare to find a band who knows how to do that kind of, like, perfect cutaways. You know who's really good at videos like that? Faith No More.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Faith No More's videos were amazing. And it's just, like, I don't know, like, I miss that kind of style of video. And we were saying, like, yeah, bands don't do videos like that anymore. Who was that band we were listening to
a while? Take them too seriously now.
You remember a couple, like, maybe it was, like, a year ago, we were sitting over there before the show, and we were watching this one band do, like, these... They had a series of really excellent music videos. I can't remember the band's name.
Red Fang?
Red Fang.
Yeah.
Yes. They're like really one of the only bands doing them like that now.
Yeah, totally.
Shout out to Red Fang.
And I like the Meadows End one recently where they're just hanging out in the spa.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, let's jam.
That was interesting. I didn't like it as much as Red Fang. So what were we listening to? Traveler.
Yeah, tell me about these guys.
Okay, so I'm new to these guys. I just got introduced to them like about a month ago. They're from Alberta, from Calgary, and just another entry from Canada. And this is really interesting stuff. To me, it's kind of like along the same lines as Cauldron, but maybe a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more leaning forward. You know, Cauldron can be a little more laid back sometimes. Traveler, it's just kind of like gritty, kind of not quite USPM, but it's got that kind of that grit to it, and it's throwback, but it's at the same time it still sounds new and fresh, and it still sounds of the moment, and you know, so and I don't know much about these guys, like, personally, like, what bands they've been in and stuff. But they had a lot of buzz because I think last year or the year before, they had a little EP that kind of blew up on Bandcamp, and it got a lot of attention. And that's where they got the record deal from and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes they're a Bandcamp band, and sometimes that stuff really works out, and you end up getting momentum based on that. They did a split. Someone was telling me they did a split with another band. Not too long ago. I'm not sure who the other band was, but the buzz on this album, the buzz from people in the power metal
scene. The buzz on the internet?
Yes.
What the fuck is the internet?
These guys this is their first record, and they have more hype behind them on the grassroots person-to-person level than I've seen any band have. So that's what got my attention was I heard people talking about them before their first record was even out. And people who read the Metal Pigeon know that I am never on the ground floor of any band. I'm usually like the last one there.
That's not true.
For the most part, I don't really try to do that whole thing of like, I'm going to get in before the band gets big. I don't give a shit. But this time I can honestly say I'm getting in before the band is big. So
firsties.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. I liked them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great record. So everyone needs to go check it out. And it's on Spotify, I think. Well, I think it's on Spotify, but I know it's on Bandcamp. And yeah, another Canadian metal band. And the guys before them, was it Black Therapy?
That's correct.
Yeah, I really like that band. I really like what I was hearing. So another thing to check out. This has been a weird time in metal. The year started out so explosive, and this month has been kind of a little more like of a lull for me in terms of just the quality of releases. But the Rotting Christ album has really piqued my attention. There's some other stuff I'm going to ignore. I know the In Flames album just came out. I'm choosing to ignore that deliberately.
Wise.
The Dream Theater album, which we didn't talk about tonight, but we're probably going to talk about the next time, I think.
Sure.
That is surprising me. I've only listened to it twice.
I've listened to it twice as well, and
What's that third song, Falling Something Something? That's a great song.
The second song, Paralyzed? great song
the,
too.
Yeah, like the first four songs, yeah. I was honestly like,
are super strong.
Yeah, and you know what? You go from an album that's so bloated and overblown, like the Astonishing, that double disc monstrosity.
I couldn't get through that album.
Yeah, none of us could. And you say, okay, well, we did this. Now where do we go? Yeah, you lean hard in the opposite direction and go, let's just make something that's just got a lot of nice riffs to it. It's muscular. It's heavy. It's just straight to the point. It's nice to hear Dream Theater do this again. I kind of forgot that they could, you know? So, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Also, the new Queensryche is actually quite good.
I've only heard the three songs they've released. It's going to be weird. I mean, well, it already is weird from what I've heard. Listening to an album that Scott Rockenfield's not drumming on, I still don't think my brain is processing it.
From what I hear, it's Todd LaTorre drumming on this album.
It is Todd, and it's just strange. So, I've always felt that Scott Rockenfield, and sometimes during the later parts of the Jeff Tate era, his contributions were minimized. But early classic Queensryche, and even like the last two albums, his trademark patterns and styles have been a part of that sound.
Mm-hmm.
He has a unique, everyone knows Scott Rockenfield has that kind of unique drum approach. So it's going to be strange to listen to this album and not have him there. You know, to think about the Queensryche with only two original members. And
Todd LaTorre, vocals and drums. So who are they going to get on tour? Because they're touring with Fate's Warning soon.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's a fucking lineup right there.
That's a great, yeah. Yeah, I think that show's coming to House of Blues, I think.
Maybe. I wouldn't mind going to that show.
Yeah,
last time I saw
Queensryche
was at Scout Bar.
That's right, yeah.
It was
an uncomfortably packed show. Yeah.
Who else was on that show? I can't remember.
I don't remember that either.
It was a weird line. Was it Sabaton, maybe?
No, it wasn't Sabaton. It was, I don't remember. It was a weird show. I remember the guy in front of me standing there was like, he was like standing sideways with his beer so as not to knock them over. And he was like so close to me. Eventually, I just kind of had to worm my way out of the crowd and go in the back and be like, I surrender. Like, I'm not going to be in the middle of the crowd for this one.
Yeah, they had that huge LED screen behind them.
Yeah. With the really bad video images.
Yeah, March 21st here in Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's coming up.
I wouldn't mind going to it, truthfully.
I had the most fun seeing Queensryche when I saw them at the Concert Pub North in the parking lot of the Concert Pub North, where there was a McDonald's literally right next to the club, in the parking lot, in front of the club. And
I saw John Oliva at that club.
The golden arches were above Scott Rockenfield's head. Like they set the stage up diagonally. It was weird. It was one of the weirdest shows ever.
With Queensryche and Armored Saint.
That's right, Armored Saint. Yeah. And I remember
I got that drum head from at that show.
Yeah. I remember having more fun with Armored Saint that particular gig.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was a good show.
It was good. Yeah. One of those shows where people who haven't been to a concert in like a year show up for. And this is their night out and they're going to order two pitchers of Bud Light.
Right.
And they're going to get in your way and they don't give a shit about it. And you're kind of like, okay, concert etiquette is out the window at this show.
Yeah, it happens though.
Yeah, it happens. That's fine. Next show I think I'm going to confirmed is that Chordin' the Bodom show.
Yes, for sure.
But I'll think about this other one.
Don't say Chordin' the Bodom. Say Wolfheart and Swallow the Sun. It's better that way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stay for Chordin' the Bodom. I kind of feel like I want to hear a couple songs, like them play a couple.
I saw them
specific
they
songs.
Toured with Tear a few years ago, and we stayed around for a little bit of them.
Last time I saw Chordin' the Bodom was on Gigantor opening for Megadeth.
Oh wow!
It was like Megadeth, In Flames, Chordin' the Bodom, some other band, Job for a Cowboy is one of them. Yeah, yeah, that was a crazy show.
So we talked about Traveler. We talked about Black Therapy.
Yeah.
Is there any other topics you wanted to touch upon?
Well, the other day Blind Guardian just announced the Twilight Orc. Well, it's called Blind Guardian's Twilight Orchestra.
It's based on a novel, right?
I guess it's like some German author. I don't know anything about them. So it's not quite a Blind Guardian album. It's just Blind Guardian's Twilight Orchestra. So I mean, I'm guessing that when they're saying no guitars, that means you're not going to get, I guess Andre was involved in the songwriting, but you're not going to get to hear him on the album. It's going to be so weird, but we're finally going to get to hear this. Comes out in November. I've been hearing about this damn project since 2001. I'm just kind of, as a Blind Guardian fan, just relieved that it'll be coming out so we don't have to hear about it anymore. At, you know, I have no expectations for what it's supposed to sound like. I hope I like it. I don't know if I will. I'm going to try to get in touch with Marcus from Blind Guardian to see if he had any role in it at all, which I suspect he didn't, if there is no guitars involved. So, yeah.
Yeah, have him come on the show. We'll talk about
Marcus.
Come on. Come and do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be strange. It's going to be weird.
So, do you want to wrap it up?
Yeah.
Thanks again for tuning in. We have one more song we're going to get to, but thanks again for tuning in to episode number 217 of MSRcast. Going on, this is year number 14 for the show.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And, of course, we already mentioned where you can find us on social media, at MSRcast on all those places, MSRcast.com, MetalGeeks.net, on the iTunes, where you can subscribe and leave a review there. You can find us on Spotify and Stitcher and hopefully soon some other places. We'll find out. Of course, you can find The Metal Pigeon at
TheMetalPigeon.com and The Metal Pigeon on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Easy peasy. So it's the last song that I want to play tonight. It's pretty epic. And if you haven't seen the video, you need to go see the video as well. Devin Townsend has a new album out coming out the end of March called Impasse. And this is the first song they released called Genesis. And it's basically about the creation of the world from the Big Bang and this throughout history type of deal. Really epic song. It's very typical heavy Devin with some heavy Devy stuff mixed into it. Some cow sounds and
weird stuff.
Annika's in it.
Was that the video we saw?
That's the video we saw.
That was a strange track, a strange video.
The video is it's interesting. It's Devin sitting at a desk listening to the song in front of a green screen. And there's this weird, crazy shit going on behind him.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. Go look at the video after you listen to this episode. Yeah. You'll be amazed. I am so looking forward to this double album. He's put a lot of money into this album, a lot of time. There's so many great musicians on this album. There's like three different drummers. One of them is that Samus guy. Yeah. If you haven't watched his YouTube stuff, he's funny too.
I'm interested to hear that because this is the one with the Chad Kroeger is going to be on it, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That'll be interesting to hear.
Well, you know, Nickelback's not the worst band in the world anymore. It's that Imagine Dragons band. It's been passed on.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
I still disagree. I agree on that. They're both fucking equally horrible. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But if Devin Townsend has trust that Chad Kroeger is good enough to be on his album,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to hold off judgment until I hear it for myself.
It worked for Jeff Tate and Aventasia one time. So.
I mean, as long as it's not a Nickelback song on the album, I'm right. good. I'm okay. Right. But yeah, pre-order the album. Check it out. It comes out the end of March called Impasse. And we're going to get into some Devin Townsend now. And as always, we have one last thing we have to say.
Keep it metal.
Keep it metal and keep it heavy devy.
For listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.